National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, we're talking about marriage. Jeanette DiMello talks with Robert Royal of The Catholic Thing about why Catholics should avoid a preemptive surrender of marriage to the same-sex lobby, but instead must continue to stand for traditional marriage. Also, Dan Burke is here. He talks with Greg and Julie Alexander about their work at Alexander House, where they seek to repair marriages one by one. Welcome again to Register Radio, a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DiMello, editor-in-chief of the Register.
Tom, it's good to be with you today.
And also with Dan Burke, executive director of the Register.
It's great to be with you, Tom.
Our first guest today, Catholic author Robert Royal. He is the president of the Faith and Reason Institute based in Washington, D.C. His latest book is The God That Did Not Fail, How Religion Built and Sustains the West. He's also editor-in-chief of the online publication The Catholic Thing, which he founded along with Michael Novak in 2008. In an August 25th column on The Catholic Thing, Mr. Royal challenged the notion that recently appeared in a New York Times article that, quote, the church is wasting its time, even harming itself, opposing gay marriage. Well, he's here to talk with us today about why the church must not preemptively surrender to the legalization of same-sex so-called marriage. Robert, welcome to Register Radio.
My pleasure.
Now, the reason I asked you to discuss the topic, this very important topic of defending true marriage, traditional marriage between a man and a woman, is because on August 25th, the New York Times published a story with a headline, A Conservative Catholic Now Backs Same-Sex Marriage. And the article goes on to talk about how we've seen moderately conservative politicians back away from defending marriage and start supporting same-sex marriage. But the New York Times makes a big deal of now a religious conservative who's backed away from his traditional position on marriage. And of course, this is talking about Joseph Bottom, the former editor of First Things, who wrote an essay in the Commonweal magazine on August 23rd, and his essay was called The Things We Share, A Catholic's Case for Same-Sex Marriage. Now, you responded very, very quickly to this essay that Joseph Bottom wrote. Can you give me some of the main points of Bottom's essay?
Well, yeah, as I wrote in my column, the New York Times is rarely accurate when it comes to Catholic things, as we well know. But it's not quite accurate to say that Jody supports same-sex marriage. He has said repeatedly since that he remains orthodox in his views, that marriage is what traditional Catholics believe it to be. But his argument was a political one, and what he was saying is that it's just not possible to win this battle. In many ways, stirs up animosity towards the church, which is already embattled because of its priestly abuse problems in the past and in other anti-Catholic elements within the culture. So it's less a change of view on same-sex marriage as such, and some liberal commentators have noticed that about his essay since, that he's more concerned about what the church should be doing in the United States at this point, this strange cultural moment, as he says, as against the rights of gay marriage. He's not so much in favor of that as he is in sort of finding a different way for the church to be effective.
So in a way, the titles, the headlines were kind of misinterpreting part of what he was saying. He was in part focusing on a different, what he's calling maybe a different strategy. But yet you still found a response to this. You were really saying that he's kind of preemptively surrendering. So why is his essay a preemptive surrender?
Well, Jody has backtracked a little bit and regretted that he expressed some things in ways that could be easily misunderstood. And Jody's an old friend, and there's a lot to this story, I think. But the long and the short of this for me is this. Stepping back from the argument that he's making, it seems to me that in the United States, at this moment in our history, the church really gains no friends by not being absolutely true to itself. Mm-hmm. It is partly true that our opposition to same-sex marriage brings further anger against the church from some people who get media megaphones to make the case. There's no question about that. But when we step back from this argument even just a little bit, what we know we are dealing with here is the defense of what I usually call six of the very earliest words that establish our kind of Western civilization. And they are male and female. He created them. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a very profound notion in our culture, but I would argue in all cultures, because there's no easy acceptance of homosexuality in any culture known to anthropologists. There's some There are some places where it's kind of tolerated, but there's no acceptance of it in the broader sense that we're starting to see in the United States now. And instead, there's a great emphasis on the fact that the marriage of a man and a woman is the primordial relationship of society, the simplest cell of society, as people say in Catholic social thought. So we Catholics are now put in the position of defending Moses on these issues. It's curious, by the way, that we're the only ones who bear the blame for standing up for this position when Jews, Orthodox Muslims, evangelicals, etc., all share the same view. So for me, to back off on that is really to allow a very toxic culture to have its own way in our lives. And it's not going to be a neutral thing, by the way. We already see that by legislation and through various legal means that the church is being driven out of adoption. Its overseas activities are curtailed somewhat because we don't push equality for homosexuals in the sense that is now being developed here within the United States. This is a looming legal battle in spite of the fact that there are 33 states that have passed laws saying that marriage is only between a man and a woman. And I believe that to grow soft on this is not to make friends. It's not even to gain neutrality. It's an expression of weakness that people who dislike the church and want to push an agenda are going to push even harder if we back off.
This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm talking with Robert Royal, who writes at The Catholic Thing, and we're talking about why Catholics must continue to defend true marriage. Now, Mr. Royal, one of the things that Jody wrote about was that the legal battle seems to be lost, that there's no compelling legal arguments that would hold in court for marriage, as we know it in a religious tradition of between a man and a woman. What do you make of that argument, that there's no principled legal argument that's valid?
I think it's simply wrong. I know many people who, and so does Jody, who have been arguing these cases. One of our regular writers at The Catholic Thing, Hadley Arcus, is a very distinguished scholar of the Constitution and has for years been making principled arguments about marriage, about pro-life issues. It may be true that within legal culture, it's a minority position. And it may be very difficult in our culture in America at this particular moment to make it clear why those arguments are controlling in these circumstances. But it's simply, in factual terms, there are many people, and not only Catholics, by the way, who've been arguing that this is a kind of a fundamental relationship on marriage law that has been understood traditionally in ways that could be perfectly defended rationally without resorting to revelation, and that the as I said earlier, that the relationship between a man and a woman that forms a family is something special. It's something unique. It's not like other sexual relationships or friendships. This is something that is at the very root of what it means to be fruitful and to multiply and to exist as created beings who also ourselves give rise to new beings generation after generation. So I think that he's backtracked on that somewhat too. Sure. In a more recent interview, and I think that he's right to do so because we have arguments. We just have to make them better, make them more often, make them more forcefully, and to try to spread the sense that there is a way to speak back to this mistaken notion that equality of two very different things, which is to say homosexual so-called marriage and traditional marriage, are really about the same thing. They're about three different things.
That's right. Now, you mentioned that Jody Bottom did make some clarifications. Some of those clarifications were made in an interview to Catholic News Agency, which our readers can find on ncregister.com if they want to see that article. There have also been other articles on the web that people can find to understand where he's backed away from the at least especially the New York Times headline. Now, one of the points he did make that I wanted to bring up with you, Robert, was he talks about the bishops would be better off, instead of doing this legal battle, he said, in trying to re-enchant the world. It seems to me a way of engaging the world in a type of evangelization that brings them back to fundamental issues about religion, Christianity, the soul, etc. Can you talk about what he means by re-enchanting the world? I think this is something also dear to your own heart.
Yeah, I agree with that point, that Catholicism is the only faith in the United States well-positioned to make the kind of, it's really a two or three-pronged campaign that you'd have to make. On the one hand, there are sort of rational arguments in natural law that give us a different view of nature, of human beings, of sexuality, marriage, human life, et cetera. We all know this. Those arguments are being made and need to be continued to be made. And Jody sort of in reply has said that that's strictly what he was trying to do and maybe gave a wrong notion of what an enriched notion of natural law ought to be. But there are also other parts of this, and I try to bring this out in my column, that it reminds me a little bit of the argument about beauty will save the world. Well, I agree with this, too, because beauty is one of the transcendentals. The church has always talked about the good, the true, and the beautiful as being the three things, the three transcendentals that help us elevate our lives to a different level. My quarrel with making that argument goes back to the earlier one about the legal situation that we face, because if we're going to wait for the church to re-enchant the world, as I said in my column, the world's going to be very happy about this. The world's going to say, you know, have a nice trip, guys. Go out and do that. We'll even get money to help us along the way. And we'll see you the day after the second coming, because that's the only point at which this re-enchantment is going to really occur for people who are distant from the Catholic tradition. So, yeah, you know, the church should do this. We're with Pope Francis. We're involved in an evangelical Catholicism that really seeks to reach out personally to people and make them understand the world in a different way. But we can't wait for that to take place to fight the battle that must be fought to protect marriage, because that's going to be a long slog. There's a philosophical and cultural movement that's been going on for hundreds of years in the West that has been pushing in a different direction, and to reverse it is going to take a long way. For me, this is not Jody's position, but for me, the only way that we can carry out that re-enchantment while protecting ourselves has got to include making a legal stand. I think our bishops understand that. Cardinal George in Chicago has been very strong about this because he's faced some very serious threats. We can do both of these things. We can do the things that need to be done to re-enchant society, or at least to maybe re-enchant Catholics who themselves have a very thin notion of what the faith involves. But there are two things here. One is sort of a campaign that has to be undertaken in a fairly militaristic fashion and holding back a threat while we carry out the evangelical activity.
Well, thank you so much for giving us a glimpse of what you've written at The Catholic Thing. Our readers can find you there, but they can also look forward to an upcoming book. In our last 30 seconds, can you tell us about the book you're working on?
Oh, yeah, this is my great recent activity. The last few years I've been trying to write a compendium which sort of describes the Catholic intellectual tradition in the 20th century in a very broad sense, and that is the number of different topics such as philosophy, theology, scripture, arts, literature, social thought. I'm trying to just write a fairly non-polemical description of all the rich tradition that we have within the Catholic Church, even in the 20th century, where it went wrong in some ways and it went right in other ways, and at least give people a guide to sort of orient themselves in what the Church has been teaching over the last 100 or 125 years.
Well, Robert, thank you so much for being a part of our show. Our readers can look for you at thecatholicthing.org, and we hope to talk to you again sometime on Register Radio. Take care.
Thank you very much.
When we return, can a wayward marriage be saved? Our next guests say yes. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
John at Bankovic talks about the National Catholic Register.
I recommend the National Catholic Register to all Catholics who want to discover what it means to live their faith in this our day and time. We get the clear, unbiased news of today because the National Catholic Register takes its cue from the mind and the heart of the Church. It really becomes a tool by which we are able to live that abundant life in Jesus Christ and to share that life with others. The National Catholic Register seeks to meet people where they are, seeks to meet people where they are in their walk of faith, where they are practically in their lives at the moment.
To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the register or call 800-854-6316. That's EWTN.com and click on the register subscription banner or call 800-854-6316.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DeMello and Dan Burke, I'm Tom Price. Greg and Julie Alexander are up next. They are co-founders and co-directors of the Alexander House Apostolate. This is a Catholic lay apostolate based in San Antonio, dedicated to proclaiming the beauty, goodness, and truth of God's plan for marriage. Their latest efforts focus on establishing and supporting the Covenant of Love marriage ministry within parishes. Currently, this ministry flourishes in over 70 U.S. parishes and several parishes around the world. Their personal story and breakthrough work in marriage is chronicled in their new book, Marriage 911, How God Saved Our Marriage and He Can Save Yours Too, published by Servant Books. Dan?
It's great to be with you, Tom. Greg and Julie, it's great to have you on.
Thank you so much for having us.
We just had a great segment with Robert Royal talking about the battle for marriage on the legal and political fronts. And to me, it's a bit more exciting to talk about that same battle, but where redemption actually happens between two people, and that is in relationship with the church as they pursue faithful marriage. One quick thought about the divorce rate in the country, which is pretty amazing. If you go to any room filled with, let's say, 100 people, and you ask those who've been divorced to stand up, you're going to get about half of them to stand up. Now, if you did the same thing in a room of Catholics who take the magisterium very seriously and who live out their faith in a very purposeful way, you may, in fact, actually only have maybe one person stand up in a room of 100 people, and it potentially you could end up with no one standing up in that kind of context. So that's very exciting. It's really powerful what happens when a couple aligns their hearts and their souls to God and then draw together. But sometimes we get off track, and that's a bit of your story. It began a bit off track, and then you found healing in the Lord, and then you entered into this great work to help others heal their marriages. Tell us a bit about your story and how we can have hope in a faithful Catholic marriage.
Well, yes, and you know, about 15 years ago, Jew and I had reached a point where we felt as if we could not continue a 10 years of marriage at that time. And we were very much those who were Catholic, cradle Catholic. Julie, myself, converting to the Catholic faith when I was in the third grade. And even though we grew up in the church per se, knowing now we didn't live church. Church was something for us that we went and participated in on Sunday. And unfortunately, Monday through Saturday, we lived our life based on the things that we thought we should do, which also contributed to us living life based upon what the world had to say. Because for us, life was all about the job, the money, and the things we did with that money. So by society standards, we were very much successful. But unfortunately, at the demise of a marriage relationship and the expense of our family as well, because everything we said and did evolved around how we're going to get more money, because we thought, again, our happiness resided in those things. But after we could no longer find those that happiness in those things, we started looking for it, unfortunately, in other people. And so infidelity became a big part of the relationship. And again, because we were out in that relentless pursuit, seeking for happiness that only God could provide. But of course, being that we were not really living our faith and allowing God to be center in our lives, again, these things became our God. And again, to the point where we felt we could not continue our marriage. So we made the decision to divorce. We went to our parish priest looking for help. He couldn't help us. He, in turn, referred us out to a Catholic therapist who even suggested that maybe you guys were not meant to be together. Maybe you should get a divorce. And despite the fact that we heard what we thought we wanted to hear, we still just kind of coexisted in a home together, still going to Mass every Sunday, believe it or not. And in this particular summer, we had a visiting priest come into our parish, and this guy was just a great teacher of the faith, very dynamic, and began expressing things in his homilies about the Catholic faith that we had never heard before. And Julie and I were just immediately drawn to him. And then we started meeting with him in between the two Masses and later found out he was the tribunal vicar for the diocese. And if we didn't know anything else about our faith at that point, we at least knew that this was the guy that did the annulment thing. And maybe God is sending this priest to come into our life to be our friend because he's going to show us how to get out of our marriage. And so long story short, Julie made an appointment to visit with him. We made the appointment. He in turn thought we were coming by for a social visit. But the next 45 minutes or so, we proceeded to build our case as to why we felt we could no longer stay married. You know, he's done this, she's done that, the whole infidelity, and all the things we were experiencing. And this good priest just sat there and listened, didn't utter a word. But as we were done, he said, look, guys, I understand your plight and your situation, but let me ask you a few questions. What is God's plan for marriage? What does the church teach about marriage? What are some of the writings of St. Paul and the various holy fathers pertaining to the sacrament of marriage? Jew and I looked at each other, found the shrug, the shoulder, and said, we don't know, Father. We're Catholic and go to church every Sunday. We used to be in love, and now we're not. And we were simply hoping that you could show us how to get out of this thing. He said, but what I suggest is that you go back and find some answers to the questions that I've asked before you make a final decision. And thanks be to God, we had enough of his grace to begin to go back and accept that challenge. And as we became knowledgeable in our faith, and quite simply began to conform our ways to that of which God had called us to do in marriage, then we experienced this great redemption and this rediscovery of the beauty and happiness that we had found in each other in the beginning.
Well, that's a fantastic story. This is Dan Burke with Register Radio. We're with Greg and Julie Alexander talking about what it means to have a marriage redeemed and then also their apostolate to help others experience the same. Now, Julie, of course, you had your own perspective on all of this, and it was very challenging, but you shared with me once something that was very powerful related to Greg taking on spiritual leadership in your marriage and how that affected you. So obviously after you had met with this priest, you began to work on things a little differently. But tell me a bit about your experience in this process.
Well, I tell you, Dan, it was beautiful because as you can only imagine, you know, when you are so broken and you think that there is no hope, you don't know where to turn. And thanks be to God, by this wonderful priest that we went to visit and the questions he asked, Greg did go back home. And with him reading and studying, he was so excited and couldn't contain it. And so he called me into the room and started teaching me about God, about our church, about our faith. And what was so amazing is I found my heart was just on fire. It was on fire for him. It was on fire for God. It turned into something that when we couldn't even find words to say to each other because we had nothing in common, we then turned to, we couldn't go to bed at night. We couldn't go to sleep because there was too much to talk about our faith, about the catechism. We would take one line and discuss it, and our hearts were just connecting and on fire, and it just became this all-consuming information that we both couldn't contain it even just with ourselves, so we had to share it with others. And that's when we knew we had to start our apostolate because we thought, you know, if we're we can't be the only ones that don't know this. And so we started asking fellow friends and parishioners if they knew God's plan for marriage. And they looked just like we did, you know, like a deer in the headlights going, what? Who? He has a plan? And then that's how it began our whole starting the Alexander House apostolate, because we knew that we had found a treasure that we wanted to share with so many people because we started to experience that joy, that peace, that love, that understanding that a marriage should be. And we knew we had to share it with others, as many as we could.
And do you find sharing the great beauty of Catholic marriage with others then again also reinforces your own marriage?
It not only reinforces it, but what we've discovered is we just think that when a couple comes together to work on this mission, here God's mission on this earth, you receive a grace that is so unbelievable for your marriage itself. It's like, yeah, every time we talk to a couple, every time we do a workshop, it not only reminds us of what we need to do, but it brings about that. I think it's that whole gift of not only being a gift of self, but now we're being a gift as a couple to others to help them experience God. And I think God just showers his grace upon us to allow us to feel those amazing, really deep-seated feelings of love that he places there. And I think it's just the seeds that are put back. It's like him watering those seeds with his grace.
Well, that's fantastic and exciting. I happen to be blessed with an amazing marriage, and it really changes everything when you're deeply rooted in our faith and we have that external rule or measure that draws us both more closely together and out of ourselves. And you all are doing a great job of helping other couples to see that great beauty. Now, tell us a bit as we come to a conclusion in our time together. We have about 2 minutes. Tell us a bit about your great marriage challenge tour and how you're helping parishes around the country and couples around the country to renew their marriage. And then let's not forget to talk about your book, Marriage 911.
Right. I believe, Dan, as a result of us experiencing the beauties and the work that we've done, other couples, and I mean, we literally work with couples all over the world, but especially here in the United States. And we started getting these calls from different places saying, you know, can you come to our parish? And we started looking and saying, you know, instead of us flying back and forth, so let's just start grouping these dates together and let's just do a tour. And so we decided to do so, and we call it the Great Marriage Challenge. And then we're going out to parishes literally around the nation here and just going church by church, proclaiming the beauty, goodness, and truth of God's plan for marriage, but also putting forth a challenge, challenging couples, one, to do something for their own marriage, two, to come together and do something for marriage in their own respective churches, or three, if they feel called to want to work with couples, to come alongside of us as marriage disciples, and we will train them to work with couples as we have been working for the last 14 years. In fact, in the last 14 years, you and I have worked with over 1,500 couples, and to date, Ben, there's only been 39 couples that we have not been able to help come back to a happy, holy marriage relationship. And we just try to express that marriage is a sacrament, and the sacrament has all the grace we need to live the happiness that God wants us to live, but we have to be living it the way that He calls us to. And as Julie has already alluded, there's very few people who even know that God has a plan for marriage. And so we try to get that fact out there.
So we have about 30 seconds left. Where can folks find out about the tour and if you're coming to their area?
They can go on our website, www.thealexanderhouse.org, and go on the challenge, and it'll be a tour. There'll be a spot for tour. They can see all the dates. And also on that, what you're talking about too, the Marriage 911. People are getting transformed. Their marriages are being renewed just by reading our story in the book, Marriage 911, How God Saved Our Marriage and Can Save Yours Too.
Fantastic. So that's the, that's thealexanderhouse.org, thealexanderhouse.org. We hope people go there to find out and get connected with you. God bless you for all that you're doing for the church and for marriage, and I pray that this tour is extremely successful and we continue to see God work in bringing about faithful marriage in the church and renewing this sacrament.
Well, thank you, Dan, so much appreciated. Thank you guys for what you do on behalf of Catholic Radio.
Well, God bless you both.
God bless you.
God bless you too.
Our thanks to you both. Don't forget, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com. Just look for the picture of the microphone to listen to or download the show. Thanks for joining us this time on Register Radio. For all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.